World Financial Group.
Hour two. The second hour of your Thursday edition of Justice and Drew is underway.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is. It's officially begun.
Yeah, it is.
It has.
651-989-5855 is the phone number. Use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. You want to comment as well? We monitor that throughout the morning.
Has anybody answered our question of the spending limits yet? Are we still in the dark about that?
Yeah.
Okay. I did get one call during the break, and someone called in and said that we have reached a new low with our high jokes. And I don't know if they were genuinely insulting or, I don't know, disparaging our jokes, or if they were trying to make a pun about, you know, like low and high.
Feels like a pun.
Feels like a pun. Yeah.
I mean, they're right.
I'm going with
pun. Hey, it could be both.
Where else can you get quality high dad jokes? Other than Twin Cities News Talk.
See, because they were high.
Get
yes.
It?
And they were high.
We don't need to.
It's funny.
They were high
it.
Up.
I
on
legitimately want to know if the thinner air would increase or decrease your buzz.
I imagine a quick Google search could solve this.
Yeah, I know. I haven't done that yet, though.
Yeah, we'll dig into that. We'll spend the third hour just talking only about that.
Awesome.
In the meantime, we got to wrap up Sam's top five.
I win.
Number five.
A four-year-old boy in Blaine, Minnesota was craving candy and somehow was able to hop into his great-grandfather's vehicle and make a mile-and-a-half trek to a speedway.
That's insane.
This story cracks me up because they recreated him in the car. There's a photograph of the kid sitting in the driver's seat.
Oh, is it like, this kid?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm pretty sure it's that kid. I mean, listen, just found a red. Hey, go put that kid in the car for a visual. No, I'm pretty sure they put the kid back in the car, and so let's take a picture of what that looked like. It's really funny.
From Fox 9, on Wednesday, police and family recounted how the young boy was able to make the trip during rush hour along University Avenue.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's right in my neck of the woods, too. That's a horrible... I mean, it's a straight shot. There's a lot of lights, but... How American, though, of a four-year-old boy craving candy?
I don't...
Like, is there anything, like, more American than just, like, I want some candy?
I can fix this myself.
Right. This is what a free market...
I can remedy this situation all on my own.
Yes, this is free market America, people.
I don't need no grown-up.
No.
It's the makings of a true American libertarian right there.
Yes.
I'm going to take matters into my own hands and solve this problem for my candy craving.
This four-year-old is a patriot. The boy, Sebastian, seemed to know everything about his great-grandfather's Hyundai Santa Fe. Tuesday morning at about 8:30, Sebastian put a real scare into his family when he took off in the SUV. Jenna Swanson, Sebastian's mother, said she experienced panic and anxiety.
Oh, I can't even.
Oh, gosh.
I can't even.
Said a little of
imagine.
Almost all the emotions going on, trying to calculate what happened.
I take it back. I can't imagine.
No.
It would be sheer and utter terror.
Oh. Sebastian demonstrated how he pulled it off, using great-grandpa Roy's walker to grab the keys from wall hooks.
Wow.
And when no one was watching, he bounded into the driver's seat and took off. His great-grandfather, Roy Becker, said he watches everything people do and he'll repeat it. From great-grandpa's house, Sebastian stretched his tiny body, his eyes barely able to see above the steering wheel, and took off. He backed out of the driveway, heading through some winding neighborhood streets, before turning left onto incredibly busy four-lane University Avenue at the heart of the morning rush. From there, witnesses report he drove erratically along University at speeds in the 10 to 15 mile per hour range before getting the Santa Fe safely into the gas station parking lot where police quickly met him. Captain Mark Boerboom, which is the coolest name ever, said, "I've never seen a driver this young before operating a vehicle."
Boerboom is a pretty bad
a sweet name.
Yeah. I am Captain Boerboom. It's awesome.
With the Blaine Police
Put that
Department.
In a book.
While Sebastian navigated his candy store run, there were some bumps in the road, including mailboxes.
Oh.
He also dinged a tree.
Oh.
In fact, Fox 9 even found a portion of the vehicle's bumper at the neighbor's house.
Oh, my God.
Thankfully, no one was seriously injured in Sebastian's remarkable ride. But there are also some serious lessons for him and his family, including plans to lock up the keys going forward and to keep a closer eye on the youngster.
Yeah, man.
His great-grandfather said it could have been very serious. He could have hit a car. He wasn't wearing a seatbelt. We could be talking about a funeral.
Here's a friendly tip for the parents. Find yourself a production studio and get a camera on that kid's stat.
Yeah, that kid. Yes.
Also, keep the keys out of his reach.
That too.
Yeah.
But something tells me this kid's into all kinds of mischief. Yeah.
That house needs to be extra longer childproofed, more childproofed than any other house in the world, apparently.
That's crazy.
Look, it's crazy, and it's good that we can like joke and laugh about
right.
it, you know, because nobody was hurt and he wasn't hurt or anything like that. But my God, if you're the parent and that moment when you realize Sebastian ain't around and then you realize a vehicle's missing as well, your first thought's not going to be Sebastian went for a ride.
No.
Yeah.
That is not going to be your first thought.
No.
That's going to be absolute sheer terror. Thinking somebody came in here, took my child and my car.
I would be curious to know whether or not this is like one of the. This is not a criticism. I'm genuinely curious. I'm wondering if this is one of those kids where the parents kind of give them free rein to go into the neighborhood and all that. To where him being gone for a length of time, because there's a couple of kids in our neighborhood that are just roaming. You know, I'll go driving through the neighborhood and they'll be like four or five blocks over on their own on a scooter or whatever when I go ride my bike. And, you know, it's cool to each their own. And I get sort of the free range parenting aspect of it. 4 years old seems a little young.
That's pretty young.
So
I'd
be curious what kind of freedom the kid had.
It depends on your neighborhood on whether or not it's young or not. You know, when I was 4 years old, you know, maybe it wasn't four, but it wasn't much long after if it wasn't four. Like I had the run of my neighborhood. You know, and it was an oval block. You know, it wasn't a huge neighborhood or anything. But I, you know, if I wanted to go to my friend John's house, you know, it was maybe three blocks away.
Oh, you guys were friends back then too.
No, different John. John with an H.
Different John.
This would be John Patterson. Yeah. If I wanted to go to his house, which was like three blocks away, there was no issue whatsoever with me going there and walking by myself. So it really does depend on the neighborhood.
Yeah. Well, thank goodness this kid's okay. He's got a wacky story to tell.
Yeah.
Now go and duct tape him in a closet.
Seriously. I don't know. How do you childproof against something like that?
That child needs to be childproofed.
Yeah.
Excellent job, Sam.
Thanks
to Early Bird Electric for sponsoring Sam's Top 5.
Star Tribune. Downtown neighbors protested plans to turn an entire apartment building into a makeshift hotel. This happened earlier in the week. They were arguing the developer misled them. And will introduce a transient population that will disrupt the community. Okay, so first, I just out of the gate on this, Drew. So downtown neighbors are protesting. So these are neighbors to the to this apparent Airbnb hotel, saying that the developer misled them. So I guess my first question is, well, what say do they have in what a developer is going to do with a piece of property that they don't have any stake in just because they live next door? Not in my backyard pops immediately into my head.
In Drew's world, none. If you don't own the property, you really don't get a say. Now, there may be some zoning regulations that have to be factored in, but if the developer is complying with all of the zoning regulations, then none of your business what he decides to do, he or she decides to do with that property.
It's the first quote that really drives to the heart of this whole thing from Susan Eisenberg. Among those in the standing room only crowd of the Downtown Minneapolis Neighborhood Association's meeting. Whew, that alone, Downtown Minneapolis Neighborhood Association, holy cow. That's got to be a winning group. She said this, "What makes me upset is the community is not considered in this. Because I'm pretty sure everyone in this room is really upset."
Why?
That's a very good question. I'm in Drew's world right now. It's a very good question.
Why are you upset?
The developer, Sherman Associates, shared plans with the association for a 122-unit apartment building. Saw some artist depictions of it. Looks really sweet. Looks like a really cool looking building. Said it has a 5-year contract with the San Francisco-based rental company, Sonder, to dedicate 94 of those units to short-term leases.
Yeah, look, there is a demand and a need and a market for this stuff. It's not just, you know, your people vacationing that would rather use an Airbnb than a hotel. I mean, there's business reasons why, hey, I've got to spend a week, I've got to spend 2 weeks, and maybe I have to spend a month or 2 months in this area. You know, I mean, that is something that people need to deal with, and they need or want a place to stay while they're there that isn't a hotel. There's nothing wrong with this whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, and it does really drive it. It drives at the heart of this issue to what you were saying. If this hotel is successful, that benefits the entire community. Mm-hmm. I don't understand, and it really is counter to the to the arguments that you hear so often from very similar-minded individuals who talk about, you know, everybody welcome here, right? Isn't this somewhat counter to the idea of we welcome everybody with open arms? I mean, wouldn't you want to have individuals traveling to your city, spending some time here? I'm sure that these Airbnb-style rentals are priced as such that you're gonna have to have a decent amount of disposable income to go and stay at a place like this. The building looked fantastic.
Yeah, anybody that's ever used short-term rentals or things like Airbnb, it's not cheap. You know, it's no cheaper than a hotel. In fact, you know, staying in hotels is probably cheaper than using these things. But they offer amenities and things that hotels don't. They, a lot of times, are more comfortable than hotels. And there are people that value that or, you know, or desire that and are willing to pay a little more for it.
I genuinely want to hear from somebody who would be opposed to something like this. 651-989-5855. And again, we'll play nice. Well, you know, I want to hear if there's a part of this whole argument that we're missing. Because in the story, it says one crowd member shouted, "How about next to your house?" I'd be like, "Okay, okay, that's a pretty cool looking building."
Yeah. And if problems arise with, you know, too much traffic or too many vehicles or something like that, I mean, that's something that you can probably work out without getting the government involved.
City Council member Steve Fletcher shared his opposition to the proposal, saying that he's going to introduce an ordinance to restrict short-term Airbnb-style rentals this summer. He said that private companies are beginning to stake a claim in the Minneapolis market. Oh, no, Drew. Private companies are trying to open up business in Minneapolis. We can't have that. How can we allow private people to come make money and provide tax? Sorry. He says, leasing out some apartments en masse, and as the city paves the way for more density by loosening zoning restrictions, he worries the trend will, here it is, will steal away valuable long-term rentals from the Twin Cities market.
Okay. Nobody's stealing anything, council member Steve Fletcher. Nobody's a consumer making a choice is not stealing from the from the entity that they chose not to patronize.
You could actually make an argument that what city council member Steve Fletcher wants to do is to steal away this private company's ability to go and put up an Airbnb-style rentals in Minneapolis. He wants to steal away their legal ability right now to do that. That's more of like stealing. You just stole away my ability to make money and bring in tax revenue. Several audience members accused the Sherman Associates of lying to the neighbors about its intentions with the building when the company bought it from the city. What? They got to run it past nothing would ever get done if you had to run every single building construction decision past the neighbors nearby. If they had to run that by them every time, and you'd never would get anything built.
But you're just a neighbor.
You have no.
You're just a neighbor. You're not in charge of anything.
Some expressed concern over the magnitude of turning nearly an entire downtown building into short-term rentals, fearing it would disrupt the community for those who live there full-time.
How?
I have no idea.
How? In person, and you live downtown. I mean, you know, you live in an environment where there are constant disruptions. Like, you've chosen to live there.
Rick Wald said this in response to that. When you take over an entire building, that changes the tone. It changes the tenor. Essentially, you're opening a hotel, and you didn't apply for a hotel license.
No, you're not. He's opening an apartment building. And some of those apartments, in this case, the majority of those apartments, will be available for short-term rental. Short-term rental could mean anything from 2 nights, 3 nights, to 2 months, 3 months. That's a lot different than a hotel.
Yeah, and I don't think they're part of the government.
It's not going to be a continental breakfast. It's not a hotel. If there is not a continental breakfast.
There's no continental breakfast? That sucks.
I would assume.
Yeah. But they have some really fancy coffee machines, though. Fletcher and others say the 205 Park proposal is just one of many plans from the building owners to turn large swaths of units into full-time short-term rentals through companies like Airbnb and Sonder. Alyssa Mulhare, a general manager for Sonder in the Twin Cities, said the company is renting 33 units in Minneapolis, including some nearby downtown. She said that Sonder differs from Airbnb in that it screens its tenants and prohibits parties or noisy tenants. I wonder if, Drew, if you were to ask the individuals that are complaining most about this, what they would prefer, if I wonder how many of them, and I'm just, this is purely hypothetical, but I wonder how many of them would say that they would prefer, like, affordable housing, right? Because that's what I feel like is happening here. I feel like this is the undertone of this whole thing is based off of politics and this anti sort of business and this NIMBY mentality. And the individuals would, if you were putting up affordable housing in this beautiful building, they wouldn't complain, but it would really be counter to what it is that they're saying. And no offense to affordable housing, but you're talking about individuals that don't have a healthy amount of disposable income because they need to go and use affordable housing, in which case I would think that the group of individuals you were bringing in that did have disposable income would be a much bigger benefit to the downtown area than another affordable housing building.
You would assume.
Yeah.
You would assume. Look, this is going to get used for, my assumption anyway, is that a building like this and a company like this, they're using it for people coming to town for conventions, for business, for events, you know, Super Bowls, Final Fours, those type of things. They want to stay close to downtown. If there is a demand for it in the market and people are willing to pay for it, people have a need for it, somebody's going to step up and provide it. And this seems like it's a pretty good option. And I'm sorry if the neighbors are upset, but you're just the neighbor. You have no say nor oversight over what happens with this building. I'm really tired of neighbors feeling like they have some degree of control over what other people do with their property, whether it's in downtown when it comes to a unit like this, or out in the suburbs where, you know, they don't like how somebody's lawn looks or what color their house is painted.
But they're given a larger voice, though, right? They're given a larger voice because they're constantly electing individuals that are activists more than they are good leaders. I mean, when you look at the city council member Fletcher, he says here to Sherman Associates on the proposal, he said immediately it was a red flag, and he asked them to rethink going forward as planned. Frankly, we need to figure out as a city how we're going to regulate this.
Oh, that's always the first step, right? Frankly... Yeah. You know, we need to figure out how we're going to control this. Regulate is just code for how are we going to get our cut, guys.
It would be good if this wasn't happening in a reactive mode to something that has people pretty agitated. Here's the thing, though. If nobody complained, he wouldn't have said anything. And that, again, goes to the activism portion of it. I think if nobody had come and pitched a fit about it, they probably would have let it move forward. But since people are complaining, these individuals that sit on the city council, they're so thin-skinned because they are just activists at the end of the day that they just end up just, okay, we'll have them rethink it, and please keep liking us.
These services, you know, these Airbnbs, and you can even, you know, extend this conversation over to Uber and Lyft, these services have popped up and have become necessary and desirable and profitable because cities and governments have gotten so deep into all the other areas that used to provide these types of services. You know, the cities are mad about Airbnb, and this is a friend of the show, Thoughtful Right on Twitter, use the hashtag TCNT. I'll just read his tweet. Other cities who are mad about Airbnb for whatever reason have made it so the shortest rental time is 31 days, and anything less than that is illegal. It's all about the hotel fees and taxes that the cities aren't getting.
Yeah.
And he's 100% correct.
You can apply that to what's happening with the social networkings, too, because when you look at your YouTube and your Twitter and how they're doing all this the self-regulating of content, and we talked about the fear of them nationalizing them or the government getting involved, I guarantee you're going to have a very similar effect. If the government ends up getting involved in regulating Twitter and YouTube, you're going to have other outlets that are going to pop up to try to fill in that void now that these particular social networks, it's just government sucks, is what I'm trying to say.
651-989-5855 is the phone number you want to comment on this story.
We'll keep with the theme of those of home ownership, right? Okay, this nothing can go wrong from this. Tenants of a troubled Minneapolis landlord are becoming homeowners. It's fantastic.
Good FM 103.5.
City. News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Welcome back to your Thursday edition of Justice and Drew. We're gonna spend a moment here, and we're going to circle back to an earlier conversation talking about the $1 billion in sales. That was the milestone of sales of recreational pot in Colorado. John asked the question if smoking pot on at a high altitude would increase the effect, you know, make you get higher quicker or make you get more high than you normally would, equating it to the idea that if you drink alcohol at a high altitude, you get drunk quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently that's a myth.
Oh.
Apparently that's a myth. I did a little Googling and I found an article called Dear Stoner.
Huh.
It's like Dear Abby, except you're asking a stoner.
Cha.
And you're asking questions about pot.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Got all the answers.
Dear Stoner, is it easier to get high at high altitudes as it is to get drunk? And Stoner writes, brace yourself because you might not like the answer. The altitude/alcohol connection is actually a myth. In fact, your tax dollars went to a Federal Aviation Administration study on this exact thing. The FAA tested people in a pressure chamber that could simulate the air and air pressure of any altitude. And they found no difference between the effects of booze on people at sea level and at those at higher elevations. Your body can only process alcohol so fast. If anything, the booze is mixing with the effect of higher and drier climates on your body, which includes dehydration and tiring easily. But that's not exclusive to high altitudes. Less water in your blood plus more alcohol equals a quick drunk, whether you're on the beach or whether you're on Pike's Peak.
All right.
Okay. So then he goes on to write, the same then would most likely be true with pot. Apparently it's not a study on pot yet that this stoner was aware of, but the same sort of logic applies. It would be a lot easier to get winded and lightheaded smoking a joint at 10,000 feet due to the lack of oxygen, but you aren't getting any higher. Your lungs can only process so much THC at one time. Gotcha. And altitude does not change that.
I zeroed in on Pike's Peak. I raced BMX bikes from like age 11 till I was like 19. And, there was a couple summers where I traveled with my dad and was on sort of on the bicycle country circuit, you know, going to different national races around the country. And one of them was Pike's Peak. You know, there's a Mile High Stadium there and they build the track inside the stadium. I still remember the first time. I was probably like, 14, 15. I still remember the first time we went there to go race. And having to race at that high of altitude and how much that sucked.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about like 30, 40 second sprints on a dirt track, but at that altitude, man, it was like, I mean, I was in good shape as a kid because I was a racer, but holy cow, was that a pain in the rear.
Yeah, well, if you're not used to it, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how good a shape you're in.
Yeah, no, no.
It doesn't matter how good a shape you're in. So
brutal, brutal, brutal.
Yeah, if you're not used to it, then yeah, it's gonna impact you quickly.
Star Tribune, for years, a group of low-income tenants in North Minneapolis fought landlord Mahmoud Khan over shoddy maintenance and constant threats of eviction. Okay, on Friday of last week, those tenants were all smiles as they became owners of the properties they lived in.
They just gave it to them.
Under the arrangement, the buildings will be rehabbed. The unusual deal capped lengthy negotiations on the collaboration of a tenants' rights group and a nonprofit land bank organization, financing from the city, state, and local foundation. I'm ecstatic, said Tim Brown, 57, one of the tenants who's now become a homeowner. I feel great, said another. I feel like all the fighting we did wasn't for nothing. So last week on Friday morning, Khan, who has been banned by the city from holding rental licenses, signed the papers to sell four single-family homes and a duplex to the City of Lakes Community Land Trust Fund for $615,000. And then hours later, the tenants signed contracts for a deed with the trust, turning them into homeowners. The trust will then rehab the buildings. It is by far one of the most inspirational things I've ever been a part of, said Jeff Washburn, executive director of the Land Trust. This is a really interesting story because there's a lot of very unique circumstances that brought about these individuals being able to purchase these homes. I certainly hope that it ends up being to everybody's advantage that these individuals end up owning these homes and that the rehab is done competently and that there's no further problems. I am going to throw a healthy dose of skepticism on top of this because, you know, home ownership, as somebody who's been through this, as somebody who should not have purchased a home, who did that during the whole subprime loan nonsense, I was a part of that whole thing. I can tell you firsthand that some, you know, people shouldn't be homeowners, mm-hmm. and they shouldn't just be handed things. And oftentimes, and again, I hope that this all works out, but oftentimes when you're just handed something,
right.
there's way less concern about if things go wrong or walking away or really treating it with a healthy level of respect because you didn't really earn it.
If you're given something with no sacrifice on your part, something really valuable, you don't value it. You simply, I mean, it's just kind of human nature. If you're just given something that you didn't have to work for, that you didn't have to fight for, that you didn't have to save for, that you didn't have to make sacrifices for, and you know, the rehabbing is also going to be done by somebody else. I mean, these are, and this is not any sort of judgment or denigration towards the people in this building whatsoever.
I'd take advantage of it if I were them.
But, oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Right. 100%. But, they've lived in this building now where things have been done for them. There's been, you know, a company, a landlord, an owner of the building, and now there's this City of Lakes Community Land Trust that's going to be responsible for rehabbing the building. At some point, the responsibility for upkeep and maintenance and all of the things that go into owning a building like this is going to have to be on the responsibility of the owners. And if the people who live there are the owners, then that's going to be their responsibility. And that's when I feel like things are going to start to go awry. When other people are no longer taking care of these things for them.
We will let you know how much in federal funds and city funds was chipped in for these tenants of the troubled Minneapolis landlord to become homeowners next. We'll get to more of this. Also, we'll turn our attention over to Philadelphia before we talk a little politics and President Donald Trump. And speaking of buildings and ownership, there's a movement going on in Philadelphia where politicians want to ban... Well, a specific type of window
that is very popular and that people really like.
Radio station.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Welcome back to your Thursday edition of Justice and Drew.
For years, a group of low-income tenants in North Minneapolis, they were fighting the landlord, Mahmoud Khan, over shoddy maintenance and constant threats of eviction. So this is a bad situation for these individuals. Last week, the tenants were all smiles. They became owners of the properties that they lived in. Under the arrangement, the buildings will be rehabbed. So key to the purchases was a $300,000 grant and a $690,000 low-interest loan from the Polad Family Foundation. The city of Minneapolis contributed $250,000 in federal funds it received for housing rehabilitation. And the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency chipped in $157,000. The funds are being used to buy and renovate the five properties from Khan and purchase a sixth home that was recently rehabbed by a nonprofit for a Khan tenant. The new homeowners will meet regularly with a home buyer credit counselor to improve their credit and reduce their debt so they can become eligible for a conventional mortgage.
And what if that doesn't happen?
Right. Yeah.
What if that doesn't happen? I mean, the key to this whole thing, right, is circling back to this story in a year, circling back in 2 years, you know, seeing how these homeowners are doing now. Are they still homeowners? Have they been able to sort of navigate the waters of being a homeowner without too much trouble? Have they gone into more debt or has their financial situation improved? What's the condition of this property in 2 years? I mean, that's really going to be the key to see whether or not this worked out. I'm skeptical.
The tenants have been organized by United Renters for Justice. I have no affiliation. Just gonna clear that up.
There's not a bunch of renters united for you.
That'd be cool.
I would unite for you, John.
Oh, thanks, Sam.
Yeah.
You're not a renter, so.
They credited the... she's kind of renting.
You're kicked out of this group.
She's kind of renting space in there. Credited the organization for keeping all the parties together to hammer out the deal. Yeah. It's so nice. I mean, that's what it is, right? Yeah. You kind of look at it and you kind of go, it's so nice. But I'm with you. I'm very skeptical. Normally, I'm of the opinion that if you've, and again, this is going to sound like I'm criticized. I don't know any of these people, right? And so I have no idea what their backgrounds are. That being said, normally, if you're in a bad situation with like a landlord, and there's difficulties there and you're dealing with those difficulties, I think most people would, you know, do what they can to get out. Maybe people did to get out of that situation and go someplace else. So I really do hope these individuals take advantage of all this generosity that's been given to them. And for this activist organization that's a part of it. Obviously, it's in their best interest to make sure that this all ends up working out in a good way. That's not to say that if it worked out in a bad way, it's going to get any coverage in local media, because most likely it won't. This will probably be the last that we end up hearing about this particular story. So we probably won't ever know the results of this. If you were, though, a low-income individual living in low-income housing, dealing with a landlord that was also providing shoddy maintenance, and you saw this story, right, you kind of be like, well, gee.
right,
you know, but we don't live in a world that's fair. For as much as the activists would like to tell you and try to treat the world that they try to make it fair, we don't live in that world.
Right, people are in the financial straits that they're in 90% of the time, not because of, you know, an unfair system or because of bad luck or things like that. It's because of the choices that they've made. It's because of the decisions that they've made. They haven't made, you know, it's not a judgment on their character or anything like that. It's just that they haven't made good or smart decisions when it comes to finances, when it comes to their money, when it comes to choices that they've made, you know, and that doesn't change just because you suddenly find yourself with a windfall of some sort.
Right.
You know, we talk about it with lottery winners all the time. You know, because suddenly now, so, you know, some circumstances have taken place that have given you something of great value, whether it's a large sum of money or a building, a home, you know, that doesn't suddenly make you a better decision maker. And if this building was occupied by people who are in tough financial situations, who have a lot of debt, then the majority of those people that are living there are in that situation because of their own
right.
personal choices and decision making. And they're probably going to continue to make bad decisions unless somebody steps in and starts educating them and teaching them how to be more responsible with money.
All of the mistakes that I made in the past with credit cards, with apartments, with home ownership, you know, made me the responsible person that I am today fiscally. I mean, I really have. I mean, I've really straightened all this out in the years that Melinda and I have been married. My father had helped me in the past, and it certainly was incredibly helpful at the time when he bailed me out because of my mistakes. That being said, it was the hardships that I endured that stuck with me the most. It was leaving one apartment complex, going to try to rent another apartment, and having that new apartment called the old apartment and go, yeah, he paid his rent on time, but holy cow, did he leave a mess when he left that apartment, which caused me to have to pay double the deposit fee on the new place, you know, that type of thing. So I wish nothing but the best for these individuals, and I hope yes. they take full advantage of all of the taxpayer money right. that gave them and afforded them the opportunity, not that activist group that right. spearheaded this whole thing.
And hopefully this is just a one-time thing. This doesn't become a pattern of just having, you know, city and organizations step in, use taxpayer resources, whether it's federal grants or state money or whatever, to purchase buildings from private landlords and just give them to people. That should not become a trend. You know, if you want to address affordable housing in your city, in your community, you have to address the cost. Why is the cost of living so high?
Mm-hmm.
That's what every government fails to look at, is addressing why are these costs skyrocketing? How much do taxes and regulations play a role in the lack of affordable housing? Nobody wants to look at that.
Right.
You know, California. You know, L.A. and San Francisco, very incredibly wealthy cities, have some of the tightest regulations and highest taxes, and have I think California has the second highest minimum wage in the entire country. yet the cost of living there is so high that the poverty levels are skyrocketing. Highest minimum wage and highest poverty levels. Why? Because they don't want to look at what's causing the cost of living to be as high as it is.
Reason.com. We'll spend a little bit of time on this just because it's funny to mock. We go to Philadelphia. A city councilwoman, Kenyatta Johnson, introduced an ordinance.
Yada, yada, yada.
An ordinance that would ban, basically bay windows, protruding windows in neighborhoods of Point Breeze and Gray's Ferry. Balconies would also be banned as well.
What, balconies?
Yeah.
You can't have a balcony?
Apparently not.
I like balconies.
The aim is to, I do too. The aim is to prevent, I don't like heights, but I love balconies. This is weird. It's kind of like I don't like eating tomatoes, but I love ketchup. His aim, he says, is to.
It's not.
What? Why is that the same thing?
Ketchup's like a sugary tomato-ish type thing.
Right, I like ketchup, I don't like eating tomatoes.
Yeah,
so I don't like heights, but I like balconies.
It's like saying, I like coffee, but I don't like chewing on bricks. They're two entirely different things.
Can we focus on the story, Drew?
Sure, I'm sorry.
Can we do that?
I got distracted.
Not that I brought it up or anything.
I like corn, but I don't like candy corn.
That's not... Okay, I could argue with
they're
you.
Kinda, I could. I mean, he's kind of got a point.
Okay, he kind of doesn't, though. It's just ketchup. It's does. Made of tomato. It's just a texture thing for me. That's what I'm saying. They don't want the balconies and bay windows to clash with traditional brownstone homes that populate the area.
Oh, I don't care.
No.
I don't care.
Put more
if
bay
I
windows and brownstones.
House and I want to put bay windows or a balcony or both on there. I don't care what it. It's my house.
They're apparently icons of change, and an icon and they're icons of unwelcome change. A bay window,
not unwelcome for the people that installed them.
Can't you have a bay window and a brownstone?
I don't know.
I thought I'd seen that.
I mean, yes, clearly.
Yeah, I mean, so
but apparently not in Philadelphia.
The bill has courted opposition. The city's streets department has said the ordinance would be essentially unenforceable, as well as a strain on the limited city resources.
Oh, good. Great idea, then.
It's so... But
it passed unanimously.
Of course it did.
Yet it passed unanimously.
There's a more direct way of trying to preserve to try to preserve Philadelphia's stock of brownstone row homes that could lead to greater gentrification and affordability problems. Historic preservation is expensive since historic buildings require wealthier owners to have the money to prevent them from falling apart. And that was a point made by one urbanist. What does it take to be an urbanist?
Just got a note. You can just start calling yourself.
Can I? Cool.
Yeah.
I'm an urbanist.
I think you can just call yourself that.
I always appreciate
until the city steps in and was like, "I'm sorry, you need to apply for an urbanist license."
I'm genuinely curious. There's a I guess it was a apartment building at the end of the block, right across the street from the noodles place, right? There's one balcony in that apartment complex that keeps Christmas lights on their balcony like all year long, and I'm so appreciative of that. I would be interested if I ran into the person that lived in that apartment. I would thank them because it often brings a smile on my face as I make the right hand turn to head to our parking garage because they always have Christmas lights all year long. I think it's spectacular. I don't think Christmas lights should just be a Christmas thing.
I wonder if their neighbors hate it.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably
management. Can you get Tim to take down the Christmas lights?
They change them. Sometimes they're just white if they're not Christmas time. Other times, I pay attention to these often.
Clearly. These have had a great impact on you.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, there's a really cool fireplace that you see, too, when you pull up as well.
I've noticed that. You see it in the lobby. Nice.
Yeah, I should go in there one day.
Let's just all get a place there.
Okay, that sounds great. Sam, you on board?
Sure.
Okay, cool. All right. Only if we can put Christmas lights on the balcony.
I'm fine with that.
All right. Star Tribune. We'll turn our attention towards some politics. Swing district Democrats, Angie Craig and Dean Phillips, wary of impeachment.
Yeah, because they're wary of getting reelected.
Yeah, right? We'll give you some details on that. Plus, we will get into the Washington Post and New York Times had a horrible day when it came to fake news yesterday. We'll give you details. And another plagiarism scandal as Biden apparently ripped off Avenatti's campaign slogan, which prompted Avenatti to respond to Biden ripping off the... It's just, yeah. I'm so glad that we're focused on all the issues.